to know, good to know, that we're never alone, because God is always there. I thought I'd beaten it, and then my cold decided, no, sir, I'm coming back with a vengeance. So we'll get through this. If you see me running over there to my box of tissues, you know. Before we get into the message, just a reminder. On the 5th of April, I think that's in 2 weeks, we want to start a 10-evening series here in Wayne. We have some flyers and handouts that you can take and invite your friends and your family members, and to remind yourself to support this event. It's only in the evenings. So if you're coming here on a Sabbath morning and you expect something about Revelation, that may not be happening, and you probably won't see the preacher here on Sabbath morning. No, you won't, because he's got churches to take care of himself. These are strictly evening services. And flyers, somebody raised their hand, if they know where they are, because I don't right now. We have them, right? You know what? Let's get them out while I wobble on and make sure we get them. Don't hand them out now, because that's when people will read them, and then they won't care about my trainers and about my sneakers, and which probably is a good thing. Hand them out. No, don't. We take one on your way out. Take one on your way out. Okay, take one on your way out. We're also going to mail these to all the people in the zip code. So if your friends or family members live in this zip code, then they will receive one of these. I don't need them. I know what they look like. Just take them to the exit. Thanks, Edwin. All of these. We don't want them. They need to go out. They need to be distributed to your friends. And like I said, put one on your fridge as well to remind you. So we start on Friday, the 5th of April. Right, it's the first Sabbath of spring. Yay! So somebody needs to tell the temperature that it's spring now. Okay, because I'm kind of done now with all the cold. And when we had that one day where it was 70, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm ready for this now. And that was cruel, you know, because that was only for a day. And then it dropped back to the 50s. I was like, come on, man, that's like teasing you with some good food and then saying, nah, I can't have it. So, why I mentioned that is because, you know, spring, everything looks nice and colorful and fresh. That was my excuse for keeping on my chucks. I don't wear my church shoes when I drive. It's too long a drive and my feet are like, we're not doing that. And so this morning when I came out of the car, I thought, it's the first day of spring, the first Sabbath of spring. And my feet were like, yeah, don't change them. So there we go. So have you ever, I wrote this a long time ago, and that's the one thing I didn't change. Have you ever read a riveting novel? Whoever reads novels these days or books? Anyway, have you ever read anything and you couldn't bear the suspense any longer? And so you went to the end of the book or the Kindle to see the outcome of the story. And so, you know, you checked, okay, good. And then whenever the hero was in danger in the middle of the book, there was no need to worry because, you know, the hero, she'll make it. It's a similar thing in movies. You know, there are certain characters we just know will make it to the end. Unless, of course, it's Star Wars Rogue One, where everybody dies, and Avengers Infinity War, if you haven't seen it. I'm not spoiling it for you, but the end, man, the end is just... Anyway, anybody else here waiting for Endgame to just get the universe right again? Thank you. But otherwise, we know, right? We know who makes it to the end of the movie. And if we only knew the outcome of our own lives, depending on the nature of it, we would be less worried about that too, because whenever we were in a crisis, we knew that eventually everything would be all right. You know, if only we knew the future. And so some people try to be curious about what is to come, and so they do all sorts of interesting things to find out about the future. You know, the horoscopes and stuff like that. And you think that what somebody wrote in a very general way, and oh, it came true. That must be must work then. I mean, some things would be nice to know. You know, if I knew who would win the NCAA men's championship, I would get my bracket in order. Yeah, and you know, I would have the winning bracket. And come on, Warren Buffett, hand them over. Was it Buffett who said, you know, the winning bracket he gives, can't remember. There was a, listen, to have the winning bracket in the March Madness thing is, I think the chances are less than the lottery. And you are much more likely to find a $100 bill in Wayne or in Kroger's or in Walmart on the floor, untouched, than to win the bracket. But if only we knew, right? Man, if I had known in the 80s and 90s about certain stocks. Yeah. Anyway, I'm digressing. Here's the thing, though, about us. So when God called us to follow him, he set before us an outline of the way and the end of that way. You know, if you are born into the Adventist church, and if you had any kind of Bible studies, if you weren't, you would have come across Daniel chapter 2 at some point. Who here has never read Daniel 2? That's the book of Daniel where the king has a dream of a big statue made up of different metals. Okay, we all know this story, right? We all know the dream, and we all know how the dream ends, that there will be a rock coming out of nowhere, smashing the statue to bits and filling the entire earth. And so we see how the story ends, that God establishes his everlasting kingdom one day. The problem starts when problems start. When we face obstacles and troubles, and when we seem to make no progress. Sometimes you don't even need problems to feel you don't make any progress, whether things go right or wrong. And sometimes God may seem to be distant and his plan is going to fail. And this once strong faith that we had, it feels like, you know, the snow we used to have in the parking lot, remember that? But now it's gone. And sometimes our faith may feel like this. Yeah, I once had that, lots of it. And now when I look at it, it's like, what happened? Just like the snow, it's gone. Or, you know, our once so strong convictions, we look at them now and they seem to have dried up like that seed in the parable where, you know, on stony ground that springs up quick and then the sun starts and everything just sort of shrivels. And we read about the children of Israel in the Exodus, you know, how they hardly had left Egypt. Pharaoh pursuing them and they're forgetting all about the plagues and starting to cry and complain and fret. And even after God gets them through the Red Sea miraculously and equally miraculously defeats the entire Egyptian army in the process, just a few days later, when their supplies had dwindled, you know, they started to whine and whinge again, wishing that they had stayed in Egypt. Excuse me? You want to go back because they had flesh pots? So you want the big, heavy diet, hinting at the health there earlier. So you want that, but you forgot about the slavery and about the bricks you had to make without straw and the murdering of kids and all that. You forget about that all. All you want is the food, right? You know, sometimes human vision is very, very selective when we look back. And we read about this, you know, and we like, those Israelites. If only that was me. Now, if that had been me, I would have stood up. I would have chastised their little weak faith. I would have reminded them whence they came, where, you know, hence they go, forth from hither. I would have stood up and, you know, well. Thing is, when we are caught between a rock and a hard place, we too wonder often why God allows this. When we're ill or when we're in debt, when we're unemployed or unsuccessful, when we're depressed, we cry out in the silence, why have you brought me, just like the Israelites, why have you brought me out into this place, into this desert, to perish? But not just in the Old Testament, in the New Testament. So next month, in exactly 4 weeks, is Easter weekend, when Christendom celebrates, you know, Jesus dying on the cross. Good Friday, where the Lord's death is commemorated. And I'm sure that the Sabbath after Good Friday, the disciples may have entertained similar thoughts. Why did Jesus bring us all the way here to just perish now with him at the hand of the Jewish leadership and of the Romans? God told the Israelites, however, that they would go up to Canaan. Jesus had told his disciples that he would rise again, and he had told them that he will come again, and he had told them to meet him in a particular place. And he has told us that he will come again and receive us unto himself, that where he is, there we may be also, in John 14. But in the face of trouble, all this seems to be forgotten. So let's not look at these disciples and say, if I had been there the Sabbath after the crucifixion, I would have stood up in the upper room. I would have chastised their little faith. Don't you know whence you came? Rememberest thou not the words of our Lord Jesus, who saith, sisters? No, we would have been just the same as the Israelites. We would have reacted just the same as the disciples. Because there's something in human nature. And maybe that's why the Lord made sure he preserved certain stories in Scripture for us. Because you see, the disciples were given an object lesson in making it through the troubles. It was given at the beginning, or near the beginning of Jesus' ministry. And maybe by the time they had reached now the end of this ministry, they had already forgotten. But we have this written record, unlike the disciples who didn't have it. We have this written record to remind us of this object lesson in Mark chapter 4, where after an eventful day, a day full of healing and preaching, and the criticism that would come with all that in Jesus' ministry, after this eventful day, in Mark chapter 4, starting in verse 35, that day when evening came, he said to his disciples, you know what, let's go over to the other side. And let me pause right there. Because some of you are like, yeah, and? So he's had a long day. He's telling his disciples, okay, let's get over to the other side. You know, he's by the lake, so they're on the one side of the lake, and he's saying, we're going to cross over the lake. Okay? So what's so dramatic about that? Well, here's the thing. When I say to Barbara on a Sabbath morning, let's drive up to Wayne. That sounds familiar. So this morning, you know, we said, okay, well, let's leave where we live in Martin and let's drive up to Wayne. Well, here's the thing. It means that we will arrive in Wayne if the car won't break down. If there won't be an accident on the turnpike, on the parkway, and the one that was on Route 3 would have cleared by the time we get there. We will reach Wayne if my health doesn't suddenly collapse round about exit 8A. If there isn't an alien invasion that will zoom all of humanity into space. So there's a lot of ifs. That last one is stupid. There's a lot of ifs. When I say we will get from here to there, for me to arrive here, a lot of ifs have to fall in place for that to take place, right? Now, most of the time, we don't think about this. But you see, the folks that boarded that Ethiopian Air flight, they thought, well, we're just heading from Addis Ababa to Kenya, and it'll be just like every other flight. And then the sensors went wrong, and the pilots didn't know what to do with this new aircraft, and bam, everybody's dead. So this is not talking theory. It is true that when we say we'll get from one place to the other, a lot of ifs have to fall into place for that to take place. Now, that's me. That's us. And here's the difference between when I say this, let's get over to the other side, or let's drive up to Wayne. When Jesus said, all right, let's get over to the other side. At face value, it's exactly the same when I say it. But there's another layer attached to this when Jesus says something. That layer doesn't exist when I say it. Because Jesus is human, yes, but he's also God, which I am not. And when Jesus says, let's get over there, there are no ifs. There are no things having to fall into place. There are no conditions. When he says, let's get over there, it means we will reach the other side. Period. When I say it, we will reach the other side, if all these conditions are met, the car doesn't break down and all that other stuff. But when Jesus says, we'll reach the other side, there's only a period. There's no ifs after that. So when Jesus says in verse 35, after this long day, let's cross over to the other side, what he means is, or what I put into the story now, knowing who Jesus is, it means that we will reach the other side. Now, maybe that thought would have never occurred to any of us, but it does because of how the story develops from here. And there are 3 points I want to make, and these 3 points are hinged on the Greek word mega. That's M-E-G-A, mega. This is a mega story. There are 3 megas in the story. But before we get to those 3 megas, there's one thing I've forgotten, that's in verse 36. Because this story is for a particular group of people. So verse 36, leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. And there were other boats with him. What do I mean this is for a particular group of people? In verse 36, we find a faint echo of the experience of us Christians. I've never been in a boat, Pastor, and not with Jesus. Well, let's unpack that for a moment, right? When we met the Lord, we left stuff behind. When we decided to become his disciples, we left things behind. Just like the disciples there, leaving the crowds behind, we too left stuff behind. We left certain habits behind. We decided we want to follow Christ, and we realized that his view of the world and his way of doing things are completely opposite to how I used to run my own life. And so I left my own things behind and took on the values of Christ. I left stuff behind, just like the disciples left the crowd behind. And then I took Jesus, just as he was, into my boat. And that's important because I don't want Jesus to come into my boat as portrayed by certain people. I want the pure, the I tell Jesus to come into my life. Oh, I'm sorry, no Caribbeans here. All right, I want the undiluted and the unvarnished Jesus to come into my life. I don't want the European Jesus in my life. I don't want the North American evangelist. Don't go there, Pastor. Don't go there. You said you wasn't going to be, this is not going to be a sermon where people call each other and then maybe I get in trouble again with all this. No, I want the Jesus who he is. I don't want the plaster Saint Jesus, because that's not Jesus. I don't want the caricature that the enemy has painted of Jesus. I don't want the good teacher Jesus. I want just Jesus as he is, the Son of God becoming a human being, exemplifying God's perfect character to humanity and making a way of salvation for us where there was no way before to be saved. I want that Jesus. I want the Jesus that reaches out to the people that the good folk of the day wouldn't even walk behind lest they catch the miasma or, in the wake of people. Now, I don't want the air that they breathed touching my face. Jesus didn't care for those folk, and he touched the unclean, and he healed the unclean, and he fellowshipped with folk that had been ostracized, that kind of Jesus. They took Jesus as he was, and so did we. When we left the crowd behind, we took Jesus as he was in our lives. And when you become a Christian, you don't do this by yourself. That's why we all sit here together today. Wake up your neighbor and say, we're not here to get a well-deserved rest, although that is a good reason too. We're not here to warm up these plush benches, although that's probably a decent idea as well. No, we exist in a community of faith. There were other boats with them as well. So we are not moving out of a crowd that we leave behind, our old value system, and now stepping into this new life with Christ and receiving Jesus just as he is. We are not now doing this by ourselves. Just like in the verse, there were other boats with him. There are other Christians around us, fellow believers, brothers and sisters, a new community that we exist in. In fact, this is the community that should show to the world what humans are like when God is in charge of them. What a bunch of humans are like when God is in charge of all of them. Ooh. Let's move on and back to the text. So, here comes the first mega. As they were leaving the shores and heading out into the lake, this particular lake, Galilee, is surrounded by high mountains, which are interrupted by steep valleys. And every now and then, it was known, and the disciples, some of whom were fishermen, knew that as well and probably had experienced it before. Winds would rush down from these mountains and through these valleys and out onto the lake and would create storms. And here in verse 37, a furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Here's the first mega. Here's the first big one. A big wind in Greek, a mega wind came. And it wasn't just, like when I was driving up here this morning, there was a bit of a breeze. Every now and then you had to hold on to steering. But the lanes are wide on the turnpike and there were hardly any trucks. And so we were good. Even though every now and then I could feel the wind doing a little something. This was not that. This story was that the wind, the storm was so great that the waves were whipped up and that they broke over the boat. Now, okay, the boat that they had is not like the kind of boat that we may have in mind. This was an open boat. This is like a glorified rowing boat. It's a bit longer. with a mast in the middle. And so there isn't much distance between the surface of the water and the side of the boat. And so, yes, it doesn't take a huge wave to break into that boat. But there were waves large enough to break into that boat. And so this was a serious situation. Why am I saying this? Well, first of all, let's come back to Jesus in a moment. But the disciples woke him. Well, Jesus was in the stern sleeping on a cushion. And the disciples wake him up and says, "Teacher, don't you care that we drown?" Now, here's the thing about this. So I've been driving a lot in my life. I mean, a lot. I've been legally driving a car since I was 18. And that is more than 30 years ago. 34 years, in fact. So I've been driving a lot. And I've been driving in all sorts of interesting traffic situations. I remember in Germany, you know, traffic was sort of, it's all right. But then I graduated. I was in Paris a lot. And Paris in the 80s, that was interesting. That taught me how to really drive. And then I moved to London, which taught me another thing of driving, to not be too shy when it comes to moving into traffic. If the front corner of your car fits the gap, the rest of the car will fit as well. Because that's how I learned, you know, that's what I learned in England. And so I'm saying this, that if I come into a traffic situation, like I'm driving home on the turnpike, it's dark, snow is starting to fall, everybody's panicking. It's like, well, you know, but I have been here before. I've been through traffic like this before. I've been in weather like this before, or heavy rain, and there's spray everywhere. Nobody wants to pass the big 18-wheeler because there's all this spray. And I remember when I was young, it was nerve-wracking because you drive into the spray and there's a second where you can't see a thing, even if your wipers are all fast. There's this one thing just before you get to the front of the truck. There's this big wall of spray and you can't see a thing. And then you have to just, you know, keep going because you know that, and then it's gone and there's the lane that the turnpike doesn't just drop off. There's no hole in the ground. You will just keep driving. And so I've been there, done that, and over the years and now I'm passing trucks and like, yeah. Okay. So when there's a troublesome situation, it takes something to make me feel nervous. Like 2 feet of snow falling in half an hour. And now only two lanes of the six on the turnpike open. And you're in the middle one. And the truck, you're doing a 35 miles an hour because there nobody been here yet gritting this. And now a truck decides to pass you at 60 miles an hour because they think, oh, I'm weighing a lot more. I can stop whenever I want. Now that made me nervous too. So in this story, when the fishermen, disciples, who had been through storms before, decide that this ain't good. We are drowning. We are going down. This was not me driving, you know, with a bit of rain on the turnpike. This is not 2 feet. This is like 2 yards of snow falling in 15 minutes. And me driving 10 miles an hour and 20 rigs passing me at 70 miles an hour. And I got really nervous now. The disciples said, "We are drowning." These were professional fishermen. That means that this was not some larry-fary little, don't be so dramatic. No, this was dramatic. They were in trouble. The first mega, the first big one, the big storm, put them in real danger. Because the disciples wake up Jesus, who is sleeping, and they say, "We're drowning." But you know, here's the thing about this. Because what they say, "Teacher, don't you care that we drown?" They don't just tell him, "We're in trouble, you know, we're going to be dead in a moment." No, they question Jesus' care for them because he is sleeping. Why is he sleeping? Well, it was a long day.
Yeah, but it's a storm. Hello, we're dying. Why is he still sleeping? Teacher, don't you care?
And I'm wondering how many of us deep down, you know, we're like, nah, if that had been me, I would have stood up in that boat and I would have told those disciples, know ye not?
No, we too, in the quiet moments in our own life when the chips are down and the storms are raging about us and we are like, oh my goodness, we too may not have had enough courage to say it out loud, but in our minds there was that thought, Lord, don't you care? Don't you care? Done all this for you. Always faithful and all of that. And now all this. Don't you care? Don't I deserve better? Don't you care?
Because, well, come back to that in the last one. Oh, man. So Jesus gets up, and sometimes, and in Matthew, the similar story is recorded. In Matthew, he now gives them a big lecture before he does what he does. But in Mark, which seems to be more, you know, Jesus doesn't get up and, oh, ye of little faith, blah, 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 blah. No, no, first he goes to work. Jesus gets up, rebukes the wind, says to the waves, quiet, be still. And the wind died down, and it was completely calm. Here's the second mega in the story. The big storm is now quietened down by Jesus and is followed by or replaced by a great calm. In Greek, it comes out really beautiful. And the big storm arose. Jesus says, be quiet. And the big calm followed. And what Jesus is telling the wind and the waves, it's interesting. The kind of words that are being used in that verse, Jesus rebukes the wind and speaks to the waves, quiet, be muzzled, or be still. It's as if inanimate nature, wind and waves, were people. There's one other story in Mark. I think it's in Mark chapter 1 where Jesus rebukes a demon-possessed person. And Jesus is talking to the demon and a similar phrase is used. He rebukes the demon and tells the demon to be quiet. There's a similar kind of word choice that Mark is using. And so maybe Mark is trying to tell us that, look, this was not just some ordinary storm. There was something behind that storm that caused the storm. And Jesus is not too much concerned with wind and waves, with matters, with the particles of the air, or with H2O molecules there on the lake. No, Jesus is not talking to the wind and the waves. He's talking to the agency that uses these things behind the scenes and telling that agency, all right, that's enough. And there's a great calm. See, we sometimes try to doctor on the symptoms when the real cause, the root of it, lies somewhere else. I like justice because God is a God of justice. I am pained by injustice and unfairness because God is pained by injustice and unfairness. But I also realize that a lot of the things that pain me and I wish I could change are mere symptoms of a larger problem, the root of which has nothing to do with certain politics coming out of certain seats of government. The root of all this is somewhere far deeper, far further back. And the Seventh-day Adventists and Pastor Pfeiffer is going to talk about that in his Revelation seminar. That greater conflict that is happening behind the scenes. We have something that tells us how that's going to end. We have that sneak preview of how it will all end. And how will Jesus, how will God deal with the actual root of it all? So Jesus says to the wind and the waves, all right, quiet. And there's followed a great calm. Some of you already experienced that great calm right now. And those of you who do didn't even hear what I just said, because you are in a great, great calm. Keep talking, Pastor. I too want to experience the great, great calm. Don't be afraid of, or don't shy away from, the calm that God wants to bring in our lives. Now, I read an article, I started reading it, I should read it again and finish it actually this time. We have an incredible gift that God has given us, because every week we have an invitation from God to experience great calm with Him. When you work in the city where great calm is the exact thing that never exists in Manhattan, Sabbath gives us the opportunity to just leave it all behind for 24 hours and 6 days it feels like the great storm on the lake, but on the seventh day it's the and listen, if our understanding of Sabbath doesn't include that, if our understanding of Sabbath is that we need to pile more stuff into it, you know, because some person who lived 100 years ago may have said something about this. Hello? Great calm. Don't be afraid of sitting on Sabbath for 20 minutes and doing nothing. Am I allowed to do that? I'm not even talking about Christian-centered, God-centered ideas of meditation. Because, oh no, some of you are getting their phones out now. Oh my goodness, now he's done it. See, there we knew he was a new age person. He's a new theology. This heretic pastor that they sent us, terrible, terrible. Listen, the devil never invented anything good. He just takes something that God has given to humanity and makes it a mess. There is great value in being able to find a quiet moment, even if it's just for 5 minutes, and to focus on something other than your work. Not having your phone on you. Turning off all the electronic devices around you and just focusing on something. And if you have to start with your breath, because that's the one thing, you know, that just in. What do I have to buy again? Oh, the grocery list. Not now. Breath in and out. Just like the Holy Spirit comes in and all the rubbish goes out. And God is great. Ah, yes, He is. And for 5 minutes to just focus on something like that. There's nothing wrong with this. And there's nothing to be afraid of that. And that doesn't make you some kind of strange New Ages, Far Eastern religion person. No, it makes you a human being that has discovered that quietness is something that is very hard to come by in our society. And that the great storm was followed by a great calm. And that's what Jesus wants to offer us. Calm. Peace. Not just on Sabbath. But Sabbath, we have the opportunity because we have 24 blessed hours to experience that. And there can be calm in visiting somebody, and there can be calm in helping somebody, in doing something that doesn't concern you, just help somebody else. There's calm in that too, yes. But don't become a busybody over that too either. Great calm. Anyway. Was the second mega in the story. So now Jesus says to his disciples, verse 40, why are you so afraid? You still have no faith? And here comes the third mega. In this translation, it's not noticeable. They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." The great storm, when Jesus calmed it, quietened it down, was followed by a great calm, which triggered in the disciples great fear. There's the third great mega in the story. The great storm led to a great calm, but seeing Jesus doing this created in the disciples great fear. Exactly. That's exactly right. But you know, and we like, nah, that wouldn't be us. You know, of course not. We would be standing up in the boat and telling those disciples, yeah, listen to Jesus, ye little faith people. Have ye not seen what this Lord just did? How can ye doubt and question him in all of your minds? Shakespeare eludes me. But let's not judge them too quickly. Remember, they were in a boat. There was a great storm. Their master stands up without any warning. He's not talking to them. Lifts up his hand or whatever he did to rebuke the wind and then says to the waves, "Quiet now. Be muzzled. Die down." Let's pause this for a second and cast our minds back to the 1980s when Stefan Bertenschnell used to live in England and before he had enough money to travel by air, went back to the continent in his car, which included crossing off the English Channel, a piece of water that separates Great Britain from the rest of Europe. And most of the time, these crossings were, it's like driving down the parkway. Nothing to see here. But every now and then, especially on the longer crossings that took you across parts of the North Sea, every now and then, these crossings were a bit more adventurous because the weather was bad. And when the weather is bad on the North Sea, it was bad. And even though the ferry was a fairly large vessel, it wasn't equipped with all this sort of stabilizing stuff, you know. And so when the wind whips up the waves, and the waves whip up the ship, and you know where I'm going with this. Now imagine if I had stepped out of this lounge full of sick people, stepped onto the railing, looked at the storm of the North Sea and says, "Quiet! Be still!" I want what he had. Because it clearly messed him up so much that he doesn't feel his sickness anymore. I want what he had. Yeah, everybody would have thought I'd gone crazy because nothing would have happened. And I remember standing at the railing because it was just too messy inside and I needed some fresh air. And, you know, going up, going down, I'm like, oh my goodness, this doesn't end. This doesn't end. I wish I could just tell the waves, right, enough now. Please have mercy. But, yeah. Now imagine if I had said that and everything would have gone quiet. Those people back in the ship would have been like, "Yo, that dude, right?" And if I had stepped back into the ship, they would have been like, "Okay, let's move over to another." Because if you can do that with, like, the sea, who knows? You know, he might turn us into something. This is not what normally happens in human experience, that a human being stands up and talks to wind and waves, the elements, a storm, and the thing just goes, doesn't happen. So let's not judge the disciples too quickly because of their great fear. Because they had just witnessed something that was so extraordinary that I'm pretty certain that had we been in that same boat, we too would have been like, yeah, who's that man? I mean, he preaches really well and the healing stuff I understand, but man, dude, with the wind and the waves, that's like, whoa, that's a complete different level, dude. So let's not judge the disciples too quickly about the great fear. But these stories were preserved for us to learn something. And what I'm learning from the story as it comes to the third great, the third mega, the great fear mega, is that these disciples didn't really know their Lord that well yet. They didn't expect him to be able to say that to wind and waves. I mean, they could see him cleanse lepers and do stuff with human beings, but a storm and waves? Nah. So they couldn't connect the miracle-working Jesus when he deals with the sick people to a miracle-working Jesus when he deals with larger stuff. They had not understood him fully yet. They did not connect the caring Jesus that cares for lepers and for the outcast to themselves, and that's why they say, don't you care if we drown? So they didn't know him. And this is where we have an advantage on these disciples. You see, we are on a journey too. We left stuff behind. We took Jesus as he was. And we are there with the other brothers and sisters heading across the lake of life, heading to a destination that Jesus says we will reach. But when there is trouble in between, how much of Jesus do we know? How much do we know him? That he can calm that. And whether it's really physical or whether it's just a calm in the mind, replacing all these racing thoughts with a great calm. However he wants to deal with us, but do we trust him? Do we know him well enough to not wonder if he cares for us and are astonished and afraid of him when he does things? And then they arrive at the other side. Because remember, when Jesus says, let's go over there, that means that we will reach there. Unlike when we say that. Because when Jesus says it, there are no ifs. It means we will reach the other side. Great storms will come, may have already come in our lives. Jesus is offering us great calm in those storms and replacing those storms with that great calm. But let us ask ourselves if we too would then have great fear of him. And this was not the kind of fear, you know, ooh, we respect him. No, this was, they were afraid. They were afraid. They were like, get me out of here. Do it now, because this dude is crazy. No, they were afraid. I don't want to be afraid of Jesus. I don't want to be like the disciples on the Sabbath of Easter, thinking my world is coming to an end because I can't see the way out. I want to remember that Jesus has told us, one day I will come again and I will receive you unto myself, that where I am, you may be also. And we're studying the book of Revelation in Sabbath school this quarter, and at the end of the book, and sprinkled out and throughout the book, we have these scenes where at the end of history, we have this large group of people in a safe and saved environment, having made it through all these storms. So we know how the story ends. And we need to remind ourselves that while we are still here, and if there are storms, we can have great calm. And we need to know this Jesus better and trust him personally more so that we don't have to walk around with great fear. Because we will reach the other side. May God bless us in this journey. And may we all be there when we reach the other side.